Tens of thousands of sport fishing boats are working in the country's coastal waters. Compared to the big commercial boats, the sport boats look like teacups. But a study in the latest edition of the journal Science says these many teacups add up to a threat to some well-known fish. NPR's John Nielsen has the story.
Overfishing used to be a word applied exclusively to boats that measured their catch by the ton. Sport fishing boats hook next to nothing compared to the industrial trawlers, 2% of the overall catch, according to a federal estimate from 1999. This is why the rules that govern sport fishing boats are nowhere near as tough as the rules applied to the big trawlers. Andrew Rosenberg, a fisheries expert with the University of New Hampshire, says this is a politically convenient state of affairs, given the way the average Joe reacts when a government official tries to tell him how to fish.
The guy who's going out for the day says, hey, once a year I come down to the Gulf Coast or I go to the Mid-Atlantic Coast and I go on a fishing trip. You're trying to tell me that the ocean can't sustain me going out there for a day and having a nice time? I do this once a year. Maybe I don't even go every year. They don't see the fact that there's 500,000 of fishermen doing this.
But the authors of the study in Science say it's time to start putting sharp new limits on sport fishing fleets. Larry Crowder, a fisheries expert at Duke University, says he reached that conclusion by combining several different federal fishing data sets in ways that showed the impact of the sports fleets. The results weren't pretty. Crowder says the study showed that sport fishers are now taking more than half of the annual catch of hard-to-find fish like red snapper, black sea bass, and boccaccio, rockfish.
The recreational take accounts for 23% of the overall landing, so that's hardly inconsequential. That's a factor of 10 higher than the conventional wisdom.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration helped Crowder and his colleagues find the data sets used to prepare this new report, but NOAA's chief fisheries scientist was not impressed by the results.
I didn't find anything particularly interesting in the paper.
NOAA's Mike Sissonwine says it's long been clear that sporting fleets sometimes threaten rare fish, but he also says it's absurd to think that he's ignored these impacts because sport fleets only take a small part of the overall national catch.
I can assure you that the people who are dealing with the management of the individual fish stocks are well aware of the relative importance of recreational and commercial catches in each one of those individual stocks.
Sissonwine says these assessments are already tightening catch limits for rare species of fish, along with new licensing requirements and shorter sport fishing seasons. So-called catch and release programs are also becoming more popular, he said. But Andrew Rosenberg of the University of New Hampshire says these otherwise welcome changes are coming far too slowly, given the rate at which many of the nation's sport fishing fleets are now growing.
As the management structure has been slowly moving along, the recreational fisheries have outstripped the management in terms of their impacts on wild stocks. And unfortunately, the fish won't wait. The declines are real and they're happening now, and something needs to happen.
What that something will turn out to be is anybody's guess. Environmental groups are pushing hard for more restrictions on the sport fishing fleets, but the fishers themselves support so-called freedom to fish bills now before Congress and a number of state legislatures. Those bills would make it harder to limit the activities of non-commercial fishermen. John Nielsen, NPR News, Washington.